The six levels of processing. We have today, after the release of many standard operating procedures, yet another standard operating procedure. The only reason any one of these processes was released was simply this. It was better than the last one we had. And it worked better for more people. And it solved cases that were further south than earlier procedures. And that is why we have graduated one after another into new standard operating procedures. And just to show you that six levels of processing is not in a completely final set state, I'm going to tell you these lectures are being made on the 8th of November, 1955, and we are talking about Issue 5 of the six levels of processing. Issue 5 is what these have to do with. But because it will of necessity undoubtedly change this particular standard operating procedure as time goes on, and because we do not want these talks I'm giving you to be instantly outdated, I will tell you that throughout the six levels of processing in these talks, the auditing commands themselves, are undoubtedly subject to some rearrangement and change. And you can pick up these auditing commands from time to time on issue sheets of six levels of processing. And remember that you are hearing about Issue 5. And when you pick up a command sheet which says SLP Issue 6, you'll know that I found something a little bit better that went down easier, that communicated to a few more preclears. And I don't say then that six levels of processing are the last and final answer to all processes everywhere and that this is it. I won't say that. And I will not say that six levels of processing at any time will embrace, without the cooperation of the auditor, all cases. But I will say that with the cooperation of the auditor, and with a sensible use of these processes, you should be able to resolve the majority of cases which you contact. You certainly should be able to solve these. And when it is a matter of going further south than these processes, you had better have a sanitarium at hand. Now, the subject of auditing itself is today a new thing. What it was in the past. We have had many auditors who did a fine job of auditing, and we've had many auditors who didn't. And what were the ones who were doing a fine job of auditing doing that the ones who didn't do a fine auditing job were not doing? What was this difference? And we find the answer lies in the C corner of the ARC triangle. And when we have this very neatly pinned, when we understand this completely, we will see that the auditor who gets results is an auditor who knows the anatomy of communication and can abide by it. He knows the anatomy of communication and can abide by it, but listen to me. At no time do I expect that you will have to be perfect as a communicator before you can run communication processes. Do you understand that? This is different. If we know the anatomy of a thing, we can use it. And we do not have to depend for any sudden necromancy, any unstated factor to exist in the auditor before he can perform his job of auditing. Now, this is very, very important to you, because you all feel, I'm sure, and instructors will feel that it is impossible to teach somebody who is not in a wonderful state of communication himself how to audit, because auditing depends upon communication. And if a person is not in a wonderful state of communication, he then will not be able to audit. Rats. Nonsense. What is communication? Communication is an ability. How do you acquire an ability? You find out what its parts are and learn how to do them. Now, supposing somebody said to you, go out and fly that airplane. You were blindfolded. He said, go out and fly that airplane. You didn't even know what the word airplane was. You probably wouldn't even find the cockpit, much less know that it had wings and propellers and things. You probably would not be able to even get to first base. And then somebody would say to you, well, you're not so good. You can't fly an airplane. This would be sort of goofy, wouldn't it? All right, we'd take somebody. He does not know the basic parts of communication. He does not know the handling of communication. He doesn't know the reactions to communication. He doesn't know what communication is as an object or a thing or as a modus operandi. And we say to him, you can't audit because you can't communicate. Rats. That's not true. Never will be true. You can learn to do anything. And communication is a learned ability. Let's think for a moment that you learned every word you know. You might have invented some of its pronunciation, but you learned every word you know. Just remember that. And so as it is in the realm of symbols, so it can be in the realm of communication itself. You can learn how to communicate. It has very little to do with your state of case. You see, if you just went on communicating properly and doing a good job of auditing and handling communication well and understanding communication itself, you wouldn't have a case. The most favored position to be in today is to be the auditor, not the prickler. The auditor has the greatest power of choice in the session, doesn't he? He's the one who is putting something or somebody through his drills, isn't he? So it must follow that auditing is more therapeutic than being audited. I'm not saying that just as a smart joke. It's true. You can see auditor pre-clear teams come in. At the end of a session, what do you see? The auditor's looking bright, cheerful, happy. Pre-clear, dead. Of course, we say this auditor couldn't possibly have done a good job of auditing if his pre-clear was that bad off. He couldn't possibly have done a good job of auditing. That's perfectly true. He must have done a lousy job of auditing, but he still feels good. Get the idea? Now, being audited itself is a necessary thing for an auditor. He would have no subjective reality on what he was doing to the pre-clear unless he himself had been over the jumps. Therefore, bad auditing should always be held at a premium in an HPA, HAA class. It should be something to be cherished. Because, believe me, after it's been done to you, you won't do it to somebody else. It's more valuable than good auditing to an auditor's training. Sounds funny, doesn't it? I'm not encouraging anybody to be a bad auditor. I'm not encouraging anybody to have a bad case or to receive bad auditing. But let me assure you of something. That's the way you learn. That's the way you learn. Sounds brutal, but remember something. You're in the brutal part of livingness. You are learning about the handling of a mind. And a mind is handled not in an auditing room, but every time you talk to a bus conductor, every time you talk to a fishmonger, you're handling a mind. And Scientology is not the science of la-di-da, zippity-zap. It's the science of life. And if you learn how to be a very good auditor, you will also learn how to live. Now, this is a great oddity, but we should remove this entirely out of the realm of psychotherapy. Auditing does not belong in the realm of psychotherapy. It never did, it never will. If you can take auditing and your knowledge of Scientology and go down to the local atomic energy outfit, and you can take a couple of their nuclear physicists, and you can make them and break them as far as science is concerned, which you can do if you know Scientology. It's no time for us to be talking about Scientology as a psychotherapy, is it? You actually can clarify the theories of nuclear physics with Scientology without you knowing anything about nuclear physics. So who's boss? You or nuclear physics? All right, let's take mathematics. Here you find the mathematician stumbling around, running into one end of an equation and trying to get out the other end, still equal. And we find this chap there, sweating away with his level of reality in the sub-abstract, to say the least. He knows his mathematics, doesn't he? He knows them perfectly. He's a mathematician. And you, the Scientologist, can clarify his mathematics for him. How? One of the ways you could do it is simply point out to him that a mind is always part and parcel of every equation. And that mathematics are assists to thinkingness and are a systematized knowingness. And just going down the line, point this out to the mathematician, and he would almost faint from shock of recognition of such material. You know that? That if you could bring a mathematician to recognize that a mind was part and parcel of every equation, and that all of his mathematical symbols were simply systematized thinkingness, he would understand that there was something above mathematics, and that was knowingness. He would have some cognition of this. He's not entirely ignorant of it. A navigator, according to some of the best navigational authorities, is only a good navigator when, after he has done his sums and arcs, he can then and there, with his latitudes and longitudes staring him in the face, know by some sixth sense whether he has computed correctly or not. How do you like that? Here's this exact science of navigation. And all navigational authorities will tell you this, that a navigator is absolutely no good if, after he has done his computation from one end to the other, he does not then instinctively know whether he's right or wrong. And the final recourse is to this instinctive knowingness of where he is. After he has done the whole thing on sextants, octants, with chronometers and binnacles and anything else you got, with textbooks and almanacs, figured out by Lord knows what huge computing machinery, the final court is whether or not he knows he is where he is. You think you could teach a mathematician something? You certainly could. You certainly could. In the field of chemistry, which is in violent revolution today, it doesn't agree with nuclear physics anymore. You could probably walk in with your knowledge of livingness and clarify an enormous number of things. And you think, ah, but these men are specialists. That is what is the trouble with them. The chemist is dealing with the atom molecule theory. He's dealing with electrons and protons. That's what he's dealing with. Then what business does he have having an entirely different system than the atomic scientist in nuclear physics? Why does chemistry have one set of equations to express atomic and molecular phenomena, and physics have quite another? They seem to be in great disagreement. They do not agree with each other at all, do they? And the oddity is that you, as Scientologist, could clarify both, or either one. So if you could stand senior to these things, and you could, than to think of yourself as a patcher-up of somewhat run-down or out-of-repair minds. It is an interesting thing. Of course you can repair a mind. Of course. This would be an astonishing thing if you, with some command of Scientology, couldn't walk out here and patch up minds. But remember, you can also patch up sciences. You could, with your knowledge of Scientology. But more important than that, you could make minds which are superior to any minds which have existed so far. This doesn't look to me, then, like you're a repairer, patcher-up, and vulcanizer of minds. This looks to me pretty solidly as though you could create a new beingness and a new world that might be a lot more fun to live in. Now, approaching the problem from that end, we see, then, that the rehabilitation of the human being is an operation on the first dynamic to accomplish the third, fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh. The only reason you work on the first dynamic at all is because it's the easiest entrance point for the remaining dynamics. When an individual has no interest in the third dynamic, he will not be a successful auditor. The least successful auditor that I have had in a class of recent months told me a very short time ago that he was very upset because he had been run on a test process and it hadn't worked well on him. And he was very upset. And I said, do you realize by demonstrating that this process was unworkable that you have added a considerable amount to the information that we have, and you have prevented other people from being hurt by this process. Do you understand? He says, I couldn't care less. He's the worst auditor we have had for a long time. And I often wondered what was wrong with this man's auditing. He couldn't care less about his fellow man. So we get, actually, the first requisite of an auditor, some idea of the scope of the thing in which he's involved. He must have some idea of the scope of this thing called life. We don't have to call this Scientology. We call it Scientology so it'll have a label. We would do much better if we simply said life. You see? We can do things with life. We can also patch up places where life has fallen down a bit in the business of livingness and make it live better. But if we call it life and not Scientology, you'd have a better understanding of what you are doing, what you're attempting. It's an oddity that anyone would have to learn to live. You're really not learning to live. You're unlearning enough so that you can live. Do you see that? All great truths are simple truths. All great processes are simple processes. All games are games as long as they are simple games. It's when you start to play poker with 12 decks, with everything from 8 to the king wild, that life becomes a little bit unpredictable. Now, the reason why we codify these processes is to standardize the achievement of the auditor when he is addressing the individual. That's why we codify the process, to standardize the achievement. An auditor using, quote, Scientology, unquote, taking a little bit off of old SOP-8, a little bit more off of engram running, a little bit more out of science of survival, and running them in some fashion or another, on some preclear, turns out a certain result. If something will result if he did that. Something. But there's an auditor down the street, and the auditor down the street has told some people, Scientology will increase your IQ. Only this other chap using, quote, Scientology, unquote, but advertising it, you know, advertisedly Scientology, he used these other processes and his preclear did not increase in IQ, and matter of fact, became more stupid. Then the auditor who isn't doing the most up-to-date or available process is making a liar out of the fellow who is, right? So to get some standard of advance, we have to have a standard of achievement. And so this is not a recipe. It's not a recipe. It is simply those processes put together in an order which has made possible a very high level of achievement on the part of auditors. And the only reason we ask anyone's cooperation in studying these and in using these and using these as given is to get a standardized level of achievement so that if you come along and say, well, I can raise the IQ of a pre-clear by 35 or 50 points in 50 to 75 hours, you aren't confronted immediately by somebody who has had 280 hours and who has had an IQ rise of 0.1. Get the idea? We're going together as a standard line of advance to a large degree. Each one of us should be able to get as good a result as anybody else. Now, I can get results from pre-clears. There isn't much reason why I can't. I have a factor to begin with that is to my advantage, and that is I'm known to be an auditor. Get the idea? There's no question in anybody's mind but what I'm an auditor. You see that? Well, you're only behind me just to this degree. You have not yet entirely established to everyone's satisfaction that you are an auditor. And your results will be as good as my results the moment that you establish yourself to be an auditor so that there isn't any question in anybody's mind about it. Got the idea? Now, we use one of these operating procedures because in the vast morass of Dianetic and Scientology techniques, and they could be called a morass because there's millions and millions of words been spoken and written on this subject. There are thousands of techniques in which an individual could get lost. And to keep from getting lost in that morass, and to keep from having to align it all in your minds before you can consider be trained, then experience picks out of that mass those processes which are the most workable and which, oddly enough, are the common denominators of all other processes. And these processes lie below all other processes. And the first process that you must study that lies below all other processes is this interesting process of the auditor, the pre-clear, the session. That's an interesting process. And your first step in that is what you're doing right this minute. You are learning to be the best auditor you possibly can be. You see? And that all by itself permits you to do the first of these steps. And thus we come in to level one of the six levels of processing, issue five. And the first level is a level today of starting a session. That's the rudiments. It includes the rudiments in the present time problem. And that, properly speaking, is the first level, isn't it? We've just reorganized this on a little greater reality. Now, the rudiments in starting the session is your first level. Level two is locational and not-know processes. These are all objective processes. These are all environmental processes. We have here level three is called decisional processing, which improves an individual in making a decision and wonders, tells people why their banks collapse on them and what the mechanism of re-stimulation is exactly. And we remedy that in level three, and this is the most fantastic step that has been made for years. This is the one thing we have been bumping up against. There are several remarkable developments of the past many months. But of these developments, decisional processing is probably the most significant. It's even senior to not knowing this. All right. We have then, as level four, an old friend of yours, opening procedure by duplication. And we have, as level 5, the remedy of communication scarcity. A broad new process which includes creative processing. And level 6 is remedy of havingness and spotting spots in space, which today is only this, root 1 has given in the creation of human ability. Now, this material doesn't look too strange to you, does it? An old Dianeticist or Scientologist who is acquainted with literature could look these over and he would have a very, very good idea of why these existed. But today, we know why auditors win and why auditors lose, because we know the mechanics of auditing to such a degree that we can spot at once a default in processing by a default in communication by the auditor. We are processing in a very, very strange way today. We are processing directly in the direction of higher ARC at any given moment of the auditing session. Any given moment of the auditing session must have higher ARC than any earlier moment of the auditing session. If a somatic turns on during an auditing session, we have at once this great oddity. ARC is dropped. There's a break in it. There is something wrong with the auditing session. The individual has a somatic, therefore there's something wrong with the session. Now that's an interesting facet to take, isn't it? That's a fascinating thing for somebody to come up with. He got a somatic, therefore there was something wrong with the auditor. We can check it just that easily. Think about that for a moment. There's something wrong with the communication levels of the auditor with the preclear. There was something wrong with the affinity, reality, or communication of that session. Otherwise, he never would have gotten a somatic. Now, we take excessive yawns, excessive dope-off, boil-off, grogginess, muzziness, such feelings on the part of the preclear, and at once when the preclear has this, we know at that instant that something was wrong with the auditing. It's merely an ARC break. Unconsciousness is a totality of ARC break with the environment. And if you understand it in that framework, and consciousness ceases to be any longer any kind of a mystery. You give an individual a sufficient ARC break, the whole environment and space coils in upon him. He is in a fascinating state of mind. No state of mind. How did he get no state of mind? His terminals went. Therefore, the space and flow went. You see, the R, terminals, went. The space and flow, which is the A corner of the triangle, went. And therefore, he could have no C. And the second he got no C, he went unconscious. Now, we see this in boil-off and in dope-off. In boil-off and in dope-off, we see an approaching unconsciousness. And we can trace it at once to an ARC break on the part of the auditor. He did something wrong. Now, when an individual gets a somatic, when he feels a ridge or a sensation, by the way, a somatic is practically any unpleasant physical sensation. A pleasant one is simply a sensation. Or a feeling, but a somatic is any unpleasant one. You know, your foot itches, call it a somatic if you want to. It merely means attention on body. Attention to body. There is a body here and I don't quite like it. Get the idea? That's all a somatic is. Now, the somatic then, that turns on, is simply an expression on the part of the preclear that he doesn't find the body present. Very welcome. And it might be the auditor's body, and it might be his body, but the point is, he'll find his body tolerable as long as he finds the auditor's body tolerable. And we get a curiosity here, then. A curiosity. The very thing for which we used to work in 1950. In 1955, November, becomes outlawed. A somatic. Ah, what did the auditor do? Oh, you mean the fellow had a little pressure turn on, huh? Oh, really? Is that so? What did you say to him just before that? Did you drop an ashtray? Did you jostle him just as the bus passed by so that he almost went under it? Just exactly what did you do? Oh, you didn't take care of his present time problem. Oh, that's what you did. Well, we'll trace it. And sure enough, every time and every instant, you can trace the auditing break that made the somatic, the boil-off, the dope-off, and the lessened ARC. That's how important it is today to do a smooth job of auditing. But the first and foremost way that we can upset the preclears, state of case, and lower his ARC is, strangely and peculiarly enough, horribly enough, oversetting his power of choice. Do you realize that at all times an auditor to some degree has to overset a preclear's power of choice? You know that? But if he does it without the preclear being willing, we get somatics, boil-off, dope-off, unconsciousness, lowered ARC in general. We say lowered ARC, just think of it in terms of not feeling quite so happy. Now take it a little bit further down scale, and we'll find out he's in the effort band at once. You know, he's not quite so happy. He's in an emotional band, effort band, figure-figure, thinkingness band, and he goes right on down to the mystery of unconsciousness. That's a drop out of ARC. But we get the same manifestation if we sufficiently overset his power of choice. If we sweep him away, if we say your choice is nothing, if we say it doesn't matter to me what you want to run, we're going to run so-and-so this time because we've got to, and I don't care what we have or have not cleaned up with you. We overset his power of choice to that degree, we will have a session of dwindling ARC, because above ARC stands understanding. And above that stands self-determinism, and above that stands pan-determinism, and above that stands knowingness. And we get knowingness, pan-determinism, self-determinism, more or less, understandingness, and ARC. And we're actually calling it on a very low scale when we say ARC. Now, that isn't the exact scale, and that's not one for you to put down, but I just want to see you get that picture there. The knowingness, understanding, these things stand above ARC and are the result of ARC. And when the auditor is not understanding, and when the auditor oversets the knowingness of the preclear, and when the auditor sweeps the determinism of the preclear side, makes absolutely nothing out of it, he can depend on a lowered ARC. So we get, what is the goal of the six levels of processing, issue five? What is their goal? Why are we doing this? If you can learn to communicate without actually being able to communicate, why then should we ever have any processing? Well, the earlier SLPs had merely better communication as their goal. And issue five has a higher goal, which is really what made it issue five, and that is the rehabilitation of the preclear's power of choice and his ability to make decisions. And that's where we're going with SLP issue five and probably further SLPs. Will be based on that. You understand this? Listen, if you're driving an individual in the direction of higher ARC, you must be driving him in the direction of greater determinism, right? That's even a higher goal than merely ARC, isn't it? So you've got to rehabilitate his power to make decisions. And if you rehabilitate that, you're doing wonderfully. Well, are you going to rehabilitate that if you overset his power of choice at every hand? Are you? It's not possible then. So you masterminds, have to be able to completely sweep aside and overset the ARC understanding and everything else of the preclear, if it's for his own good and the benefit of his case. And at the same time, increase his ARC and his power of choice. Now, how are you going to do that? That is an interesting problem, and that is the only place where you will have any difficulty with auditing. We must preserve his power of choice. He says he's got to talk some more about Papa. He is not a Scientologist. He doesn't know I could split this universe off if I had to. He doesn't seem to pay any attention to that at all. He just wants to sit there and be an analyst. or be analyzed. He's just going to talk and talk and talk about Papa and Papa and Papa, and we've got to get some auditing done around here. That means that we've got to overset his power of choice, right? And so, we're going to overset his power of choice by hitting him over the head? No, we're not. We're simply going to use two-way communication, and we're going to throw his power of choice aside just to this degree. We're going to as-is what's making him choose at that moment. And we're going to talk to him about it. Now, here's the pre-clear. Here's the pre-clear. Who will not be audited? He says, I do not need auditing. How do we overset his power of choice without oversetting his power of choice? See, that is the conundrum which modern auditing must solve, and it's solved by the auditor by being slippy, smart. Get the idea? He's got to be smart. And there is where your attention and concentration is invited. Once you know all these other things by rote, you can still learn more about preserving somebody's power of choice while he does exactly what you say. Now, that's the good and skilled auditor. Person doesn't want to be audited. Don't need auditing. I don't need auditing. Oh, heavens, I remember very well. They said I was one of the sanest men that ever graduated from that particular insane asylum. I don't need any processing. Not me. His power of choice says, don't process me. And the auditor's sitting there, and he knows he's got to. The auditor is in this kind of a situation. The wife and the two kids are going batty. You see this? And this fellow says, I don't need any audit. There's nothing wrong with me. Glub, glub, glub. You know? And the auditor says, I'd happily audit the wife. I'd happily audit the children. But I know that if I do, the environment will continue sufficiently disturbed that my auditing will have minimal gain. So therefore, the smart thing to do to save me hours and hours and hours of work is to audit the husband in this particular case. And he says, I don't need any auditing. How do we get around this? We sit and talk with him by the hour, if we have to, about why he doesn't need any auditing. Axiom 51. Postulates in communication can change best. So, we want to change his decision. We rather suppose that non-survival decisions are always contained and enmasked and prompted by mist. We always suppose this. It's not exactly technically correct, but it's a nice supposition. And it works because we simply start talking to this chap about why he doesn't want to be audited, and the next thing you know, he's saying, why don't you audit me? Get it? He changed his power of choice. But you were the skilled technician. You know what is preventing the individual from exercising free choice. We know that his morality, his decency, his beingness, his future, all these things depend upon his ability to exercise himself, not a ridge or a demon circuit, a power of choice. We know that man is basically of goodwill. And we know that he can be assigned values which are bad to a point where he thinks he's bad. Man A assigns to man B bad intentions. Both A and B have good intentions. But A assigns bad intentions to B. Now get this nice little proposition. B assigns bad intentions to A. And it makes a nice game. But after a while, B slides into the assigned intentions, which he's misowning. And he says, these are my intentions. And so, peace on earth to men of goodwill becomes war and chaos. It's an odd thing that men of goodwill always have peace. They always have peace and calm and a game when they want one. And here is this individual who evidently can't play a game. He obviously is expressing bad intentions. He is being very remiss. He is holding back. He won't give. He won't cooperate with his family. His decisions are irrational and didactic. What do we suppose about this man? We suppose at once that if he himself could exercise his intentions, that they would be good intentions. The oddity is, as we can work this out, as we clear an individual up, we find his intentions about the race and others and the universe at large getting better and better, more and more freely expressed. We find this odd thing of good intentions on every hand, assigning bad intentions on every hand. Great oddity. It's not a conundrum, it's just the way the universe runs. And we find this individual expressing non-cooperation, no participation. We find him expressing succumb to various parts of his environment that he shouldn't be expressing succumb to. He, let us say, is part of a family unit, and this family as a unit could win if it forwarded its will against and into the environment. And instead of the family as a unit facing into the environment and accomplishing things, we find this family possessed in the middle of it of an individual who faces the family as his conquest. And, of course, the family can't win. We have a house, an old cliche, house divided against itself. So we have to audit this man, but we find out that his unwillingness to be audited is ridge. And we find out that we can discuss this subject with him as to why he doesn't want to be audited, and he will run the ridge out. Remember, you are the technician, you are the expert. You know when a ridge is talking. So just make it say yes. And it'll disappear. Make it acknowledge. Talk at it, talk through it, and it'll be gone. Of course, remember, there is this liability. If he's really mad and you start talking to him, the fact that you put a communication into the area at all will probably cause an explosion. He'll probably get angry. He'll probably get upset. His first communication will be maybe rage or apathy in your direction. But remember, it's a communication. And when you get in an auditing room and you're dodging your third ashtray or chair, just think to yourself this: at least, thank God, it's a communication. Now, let's look at level one. Let's look at it right up close. Let's be terribly technical now. We've talked about the basic theory of this, really, of auditing and what we're trying to do. And let's look at level one right up close. And we find that it consists of all of the rudiments. And the first thing we must know about it is all of these things must be established or present at the beginning of every session. And the oddity is that they must be reestablished whenever a preclear goes out of session. We have learned something new today. We have learned that in the middle of a session, a preclear is liable to go out of session. And when he goes out of session, we start a session all over again. Get the idea? We don't let him sit there and yawn and get bored and wander off and get interested in something else. So we just realize he's out of session, that's all. So we start the session all over again. And these rudiments concern the starting of a session. So the odd part of it is you always go to level one when in doubt. When in doubt, go to level one. And level one is as follows. Rudiments. These must be established at the beginning of every session. They must be reestablished each time the PC intends to go out of session. And the rudiments are: A, find the auditor. Find the auditor. It's an interesting thing, since you yourself must know that you are an auditor in order to be found. The first thing you must learn about auditing is know that you are an auditor. You're not then a chemist who is learning something about auditing in order to fix up his wife. If you were studying Scientology from the standpoint of an auditor, for heaven's sakes, be an auditor. Don't be a lorry driver who is getting a smattering of this and that. Be an auditor. See, there's a difference there. You can't walk halfway into a beingness and expect it ever to operate for you. Be an auditor. Society looks around and says, what is this man? And this fellow says, well, the actuality is so and so and so and so. We don't care what he says as long as the society can find in him an auditor. Get the idea? We don't care what he says. We don't care what hat he's wearing. But let him, for heaven's sakes, know that he is an auditor, and let the society know that he can do something for them to increase their livingness. And that's what we mean, find an auditor. Do you know why you have difficulty auditing your mother or your father or would have? Do you know why? Because you're not an auditor, too. You're a little girl or a little boy that they kind of raised up, you know. But you can audit your mother or your father or your husband or your wife. All you have to do in order to accomplish that and it might take you a little while to do it, is crack through the barricades on the subject that you are an auditor. You're a professional. Get the idea? Don't ever be an amateur, not at anything, anywhere, at any time. I don't care what you're doing, if you're picking pockets, for God's sakes, be a professional. Now, part B is find the PC. Now, this is stated in that fashion on this first list which was issued. It's so that the auditor will remember to find a PC, too. It's a double entendre. Find the PC. Find an auditor. Now, the PC has got to find a PC, too, you know. He's got to establish his beingness as a PC, and he has to satisfy himself that you are an auditor. You see that? He has to satisfy himself he is a PC and that you're an auditor for you to really get a show on the road. Now, the odd thing about it is that you can take the techniques of Scientology and administer them in some strange fashion or another, and you can achieve some interesting results. You can be talking to your hostess. This is sort of covert auditing. Everybody does this. You're talking to your hostess at the supper party, and she's talking about who she's had such bad kidney pains. And you talk to her along exactly certain lines, and all of a sudden she doesn't have the kidney pains. She didn't know an auditor was there, and she didn't know that she was a PC. And you turned off her kidney pains. Sure, you turned off her kidney pains. You have not, to any slightest degree, increased her power of choice. Always remember that. You can turn off anybody's kidney pains. These are tricks. These are interesting tricks. These are tricks that you should be able to do. See? Anybody expects from you miracles daily. I mean, that's routine. See, that's nothing. There's nothing to it. Three of us last night passed a fellow who had been knocked down in the street. And he was just dying when we passed, and he was beginning to live when we were 10 feet beyond him. We never talked to him. That's interesting, isn't it? It's a minor miracle. So what? What'd we do? Go just some Scientology. Did we talk to him? No, he was unconscious. We said, pick up that mock-up. He did. Anybody expects these things of you. That you should do is routine. This other's a little trickier. Little trickier. Find an auditor. Find a PC, let the PC know he's a PC, get him into session, get his cooperation, get him rolling, and then you will see his power of choice start to improve. Up to that time, you'll just be auditing messed. You'll be auditing pieces of his body. You'll be auditing circuits and ridges, and certainly you can change their minds. Certainly you can make these fellas feel a little happier. Why not? You're supposed to. You're an auditor. That's just living, see? There's nothing to that. But increasing his power of choice, making him a more able person, bringing up his ability to decide, these require that you find an auditor, find a PC, and find a session. And we must establish these things, the auditor, the PC, and the session, in order to get one wheeling. So you have him find the session environment. How would you get him to do that? You just have him notice a few things in the room. You would talk with him. He would finally get that established. How do we find a PC? One time we asked a lady for 5 hours what she was doing before she finally gave us a straight answer. I'm being audited. Up to that time, she was doing anything else. She was trying to review her past. She was trying to find out why her husband jilted her. She was trying to find out this. She gave these fantastic answers as to what she was doing right there in that chair. What she was doing in the chair was being audited, and it took her 5 hours to find it out. And when sessions start failing and when no changes occur, it will happen because you have not started a session and no session has ever been in progress. And if you know that clearly today, it's true. If you know that clearly, then you won't worry about cases that are far south. You'll go down to a spin bin and you'll see this person sailing around the room saying, I'm a bird, I'm a bird, I'm a bird. And you will say, all right, go back to birth, do this, do that. Run some non-mess processing, you know, verbal commands at their head. We tested all that sort of thing out. The person's getting no better. They're still flying around the room saying, I'm a bird, I'm a bird, I'm a bird. You know how to really make that person start to recover? You might start running around the room with them. All of a sudden, they'd turn and look at you and say, "Somebody, it is here." And they would get better at that moment. See? They'd gone that far toward finding an auditor. After a while, they'd find out they were a PC. They weren't a bird. And you would have made a second game. And then they'd find out there was such a thing as an auditing session, that it was in progress. And they were doing a drill of some kind or another. And they would have made another game. But you think you're going to make any other gains? No, you have to make those gains first, and then you can make other gains. So remember that when a case looks just too horrible to crack. You never started it. How do you know whether Scientology works on this case or not? It was never begun. All right. Now, we've established the session environment, according to C. We had to find the auditing room, you might say. And in D, we established that a session was in progress. Now, you have to remember this, part E, that you must accept every communication the PC originates. Got it? Every one. Because he doesn't originate very many. Cherish them like gold. And do you know the fastest way to knock a PC out through the bottom? The fastest way to knock him down is to fail to accept a communication which he offers. He said something fantastic has just occurred. Or he says, "You know, I feel sort of strange." And you say, "That's fine," and go on with the next auditing command. And then about 10 minutes later, he's got a nice somatic, and about 20 minutes later, he's boiling off. What went wrong? You didn't accept an originated communication. He said, "Maybe I've got a funny feeling." And you said, should have said, "Where is it? Is that so? Is that a fact?" In other words, you had to put some interest into it. You had to say, "Where? How? What?" And he described it, and you finally realized that he was not quite as interested in it, and you were then free to go on with it. But if you didn't do that, you had a bog right there. He doesn't originate very often. Now, how about the compulsive outflow case? Remember, I said you accept every originated communication. When did a compulsive outflow case ever send out a communication? You know what you must do then? You must get them to accept the acknowledgement. And so we've got a little reverse curve on this, which is still contained in that line. You've got them to accept an acknowledgement. Someplace, 71 trillion years ago, somebody failed to acknowledge, and they're still waiting for it. So they're still talking. One time we had an auditor get around in front of the PC who was doing this and held up his finger, wagged his finger back and forth, and kind of fixated the PC, and finally said, "Good." And the PC said, "Ha!" and stopped talking. First time in the week this person had been without words. See? So if they're compulsive outflow, you make sure that they know they've gotten an acknowledgement. You just work on it until they do know you've acknowledged them. I have even been so crude as to, this is crude, to ask a preclear, "Did you receive?" I've said, "Good," you know, and the preclear's gone, "Yappity, yappity, 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 garble, garble, garble." And I say, "Wait a minute, did you receive my acknowledgement?" And the PC says, kind of vaguely, "Well, I'll say it again." "Okay, did you get that?" "Yeah, I did," you know. And the case really start to pick up. One of the things that happened in that particular instance is the preclear had lost the auditor. So we put the auditor back by getting an acknowledgement and getting it through. These things you will learn. These things are easy. But they are very, very essential. Now, when we accept every communication the PC originates, he must know it, you understand? And sometimes it takes a lot of doing to get him to know it. Now, F, part F of level one, is acknowledge every command execution by the PC. He does something, for heaven's sakes, even if it's in the spirit of good dog, at least say, "Fine, okay." He walked over to the wall, something of the sort. "Fine, okay." Do you know how valuable this is? You know, this weird thing can occur that a PC says, and you say, "Fine." And he'll believe that he has originated a communication. He isn't originating very many. And he will, right after that moment, have this strange feeling that he just said something to you. That hiccup was simply a communication gone solid. He starts scratching the back of his head. You say, "Fine." and he will have the feeling that he originated communication. Because he did, but the communication was solid. All right. Now, here's an important one. Part G. Agree upon the process and the command form before using it, and do not confuse it. Now, naturally, when you're just easing into session, you're not going to have a big discussion with us pre-clear about command forms. You're trying to get control of the session at the beginnings and early, so you're not going to give him much power of choice because he hasn't got much. But later on, you tell him what you're going to do. Don't keep upsetting his level of expectancy. His expectancy level must not be upset, you see. You're running along and you're giving him this and that, and then you say, well, I'm going to give you a new process now. All right, stand on your head in the corner, and he says, what? You know, he's upset. He'll kind of stick at that part of the session. So we give him warning, and we say, now I'm going to run this on you. And the individual says, fine. But that's part of what we call a communication bridge, which is a technical thing today. All right. We certainly don't confuse the process. If we start an auditing command, we continue with the auditing command. Or we make a lot of talk about it, two-way communication, and then we change it as being more workable, you understand? But if we get started with the command, why, we continue with it. Now, use two-way communication liberally. That's H. Don't be afraid of two-way communication. Compulsive outflow? Compulsive listening on your part? Nah. Two-way communication, yes. You can handle anything with two-way communication. I follow the auditor's code, and that stands for itself, that you would, but it's there. J, deal with present-time problem, which may be present at the beginning, or arise during, or reoccur during a session. Handle the present-time problem. Sometimes you've handled it adequately, you know, at the beginning of the session, and three-quarters of the way through the session, it suddenly is back in your teeth again. The pre-clear is drifting off. There's something wrong. And you ask him what it's all about. The present time problem is hitting him again. So you handle it all over again. But what he's done, he's gone out of session. So you put him back into session again. And that includes handling the present time problem every time. All right. Now, we have K. Use a communication bridge at every process or area change. Now, we have lots to say about a communication bridge. But in essence, a communication bridge is this thing. It gives him warning that you're going to stop the process, which you are doing, and then stops it. And then, as is, any upset, confusion, or damage, which may have resulted over having used that process, even if it was apparently very successful, you see. And then we warn him that we're going to start a new process, we discuss it, and then we tell him when we're going to start it, and then we start it. You got it? And that's a communication bridge. Session to session gaps also require bridges, but process to process gaps require bridges. And out of these composite bridges, if you build them well, you get a bridge from where the pre-clear was to where the pre-clear should be on the tone scale. Communication bridge. We said in book one, we're going to build a better bridge. Well, this is a communication bridge. All right. Now, we establish the goals by two-way communication. And what do you know? Here's an auditing command right in the middle of level one. That's a funny place for it to be. A repetitive auditing command? You know this guy can't run one. Oh, you'd better run this on him. It'll do him more good than damage. You have him assign some intentions. You point to a person, or you point to the roof, or you point to anything you want to point to, and you say, assign an intention to that. You know why you do this? Because he may be audited without any auditing goals. And this is to rehabilitate his auditing goals, and it's the fastest way to do it. Got it? Instead of monkeying around with it, just grab him by the hair of the head and slap him into the process. Say, well, now, your goals, this way, that way, so forth. And then we say, well, I'm going to show you just what we mean by auditing, you know, gently. Just what we mean by auditing. Now, you see that ashtray over there? Well, assign an intention to it. And you'll say stupidly, well, it's to receive ashes. Well, can you get a better intention or invent one or something of the sort? Well, it's to stand there. He'll be very inventive for a long time. He'll drain the bank out if you give him a chance. Make him invent some intentions, and then he'll have some goals for auditing, because normally his goal is just to be audited. And you can have a goal just to be audited for 500 hours. So you'd better get the tension straightened out right there in level one. You'll find they'll change as time goes on, but if they change, you'll have to start sessions again. And that includes that again, doesn't it? It's one of the hottest processes there is, by the way. N, Run SOP8C is given in creation of human ability until the PC is certainly obeying auditing demands and is under control. What an interesting thing. You mean SOP8C has finally come back to its exact original intention, which was to get a session started. So we have him assign some intentions, and he does that. We've established these other things. We're talking about two-way communication, so forth. We haven't got a pre-clear under control yet. Now, if we're going to go into the next spotting people and spotting objects and that sort of thing, we may have somebody who's fairly badly out of control. So let's spend a few minutes just giving him a little drill, you say. I want to test you a little bit. I want to give you a little bit of drill. Do you see that wall over there? Fine. Why don't you walk over to it and touch it? The individual says, what do we do that? Well, it's just a little drill. We're just testing your reactions and so forth. They just walk over to it and touch it. So he does, and you say, that's fine. Here you go. It doesn't mean run SOP8C flat. It says run it until this guy, this girl, is going to follow your auditing commands. And that was the original intention of SOP8C, and we better return it right back there where it belongs, because that's where it worked best. It works fine as a process all by itself, but this is used to start an auditing session. You got the idea? You found the auditing room by having him notice a few things. In the same level, you have him walk over and touch a few things. You fix him up so he's willing to follow your auditing commands. And after that, he'll follow subjective commands. He will spot. He will do things that you tell him to do. And by his doing things that you tell him to do, he will regain his power of choice, because he can now do things that he can do. You understand? You take him over to give him into his own hands. And you make this adequately clear in the first level. You understand this first level now? Well, I hope it will be of service to you. Thank you.